Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise, 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 noise.
It's 10 o'clock and time for us to make some history. Kind of. It's the pairing of two men, each with their own individual take on the Atlanta sports scene.
I'll take that.
For the next 4 hours, enjoy what we hope will be a great pairing of sports talk juggernauts. Well, that's what we're hoping for, at least.
Wow, you're handsome.
Durr.
Now, it's Andy and Randy. Andy Bunker.
I'm a first place individual.
And Randy McMichael.
You are that. You are that.
Just make sure you don't touch that dial, then we'll be cool. Touch it and use the fool.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle, and for Andy and Randy on this Labor Day. We got a whole lot of stuff to get to. We got game week in the NFL. Falcons kick it off on Sunday for real. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up later on with the former Falcon, Harper LaBelle. Got a big weekend of college football to talk about.
What's this blue button that I push and it says no? Oh, I'm looking at the wrong way. What's going on, Chris?
How are you, man? I know how well you are today. I know how good you're feeling today after your Saturday.
You said just before we went on, the last time we were on was at training camp. I'd forgot all about training camp.
Yeah.
It's been such a while.
Where did our August go?
Emory. When we were there for the Special Olympics, we did that together.
Yeah.
And then what else? You're Mr. College Football guy. Your team have.
Oh.
You and Chuck Reed, both team have
yeah.
Hashtags and all the other stuff about there.
All right.
He'll be
all
on right. Later, right? Does he follow us, he and Rob?
They could be. I'm not even sure. They do? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Jahi says they do, so I trust Jahi. Tribble and Chuck Reed coming up after us today. But Harper and I will keep you company for the next little bit. Again, we got a whole lot of stuff to get into today. We'll talk some college football. DJ Shockley, former Georgia quarterback, he'll be with us at around 12:20. Marvin Freeman, former Braves pitcher, coming up at 1:20. We'll talk a lot of football today. We'll talk a lot of Braves. Here we are, early part of September, Braves still in first. But that is not where I want to start today. I want to start, Harper, with your Saturday in Knoxville, Tennessee, as a part of the Georgia State broadcast crew. Heck of a game. Heck of a game, heck of a win. First thing that stands out, and I want to hear about that day and that game from your perspective, but the first thing that stood out about that game is the fact that Georgia State dominated the line of scrimmage. They dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides, I thought.
Chris, we don't have anybody bigger than 6'2", 285 on the defensive line. A lot of 6-foot players. And I teased with you in the bullpen about the 3-star athletes. Georgia State has a couple of 3-star athletes that they've got right there, you know. Tennessee has 3 or 4 3-star guys on their roster, too, from the same recruiting class. So there's a similar and a comparison right there that you would make. But the difference is everyone else at Tennessee is a 4-star or a 5-star guy, and we don't have a single one. But I'm glad you noticed that because I thought that was going to be one of the differences. Dave Cohen has said forever, he goes, remember the running game. We got to be able to run the football. And last year they kind of turned the tide a little bit, but, you know, they were 2-10.
Did you expect Dan Ellington to play the way he did? Because I thought he had a fantastic game overall from, number one, coming up clutch when they needed it, but also just kind of being that steady hand that he didn't cost you anything.
I think both quarterbacks, Garantano from Tennessee, Dan was 3 of 11 at halftime. We only had 3 completed pass, and I thought he got his feet set, but he was overthrowing guys. You know, he'd throw a 15-yard curl route, and it would be well over his head.
You think he was just juiced, psyched to be there in that environment?
A little nervous, maybe. Yeah. I need to get comfortable because I've done it in practice for the last month, but here's a game, And this is the turf that hasn't, I mean, there's never been a weed on that grass. It's gorgeous. It's perfect. Remember when it was old AstroTurf? I played on it when it was the old AstroTurf. And then I'm not sure if they went sport turf, but when they went natural grass, it's one of the finest fields you ever, I mean, it was just wonderful.
Here's the thing about Ellington that stuck out to me as we talk a little bit about Georgia State and their victory over Tennessee on Saturday. Harper LaBelle, part of the Georgia State broadcast crew. Dan Ellington, 11 out of 24, 139 yards, two touchdowns. Those numbers in and of itself, you add in the 61 yards rushing, okay, you had 200 yards of total offense, all right. But six of his 11 completions went for first downs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, to me, when you talk about a guy that's coming up clutch in a big situation, that was him Saturday.
Tennessee had what I would figure is cover corners. They had guys on the outside that could cover you, run man for man with you. And I played with Deion for a few years, so I understand how Deion would let guys look like they're open to an opposing quarterback just so he'd get the ball thrown that way. And then with his speed, he could catch up. I don't know if Tennessee's DBs were quite in that same mode, but we couldn't throw to the outside. At least, I mentioned just a moment ago, some of the passes were high and errant. Dan only threw five picks last year, so I'm either going to throw to my guy or I'm not going to make the throw. So maybe some of those were throwaways, and I'm with him on that. But we started to be able to go down the middle. Roger Carter had a big catch down the middle, our tight end. And then the touchdown to Christian McCoy was down the middle. So they realize that they're trying to take away the outside. All right, well, let's try the middles. And so from a play-calling perspective, from the coaches getting the information down to the players, and again, the offensive line giving him enough time to throw, that combination, it just seemed to work. And it was in the fourth quarter when we scored seven after they had just scored a touchdown. Oh, excuse me, they got a field goal. And that's when I thought for the first time in that ballgame, this is going to happen. It's not if it's going to happen, because we answered it.
Right.
Teams in the past would fail. We had a lead in the fourth quarter against Wisconsin a couple years ago. We played there, and we took the lead with about 12 minutes left to go. And the first thing I think, man, that clock, there's just way too much time. They brought in the kid Hornibrook, the quarterback from them, left-handed kid. He sparks them. They get two touchdowns. They win. They blow us out. But not this week. That's the thing. The defense played very, very well. They're not as big, but they were fast, and they seemed to know where Tennessee wanted to go with the ball.
Tennessee played, by the way, a heck of a job now by Sean Elliott and his coaching staff. I mean, they had those guys. They had them prepared. They knew what was coming, and at the end of the day, you got to execute, and they did that too.
If I can say this real quick, to echo that, we heard it on the postgame from some of the players that we interviewed. From the day they lost to Georgia Southern here last year in December, there were kids that kind of owned what they needed to. And Sean beat them up, Sean Elliott, the head coach, beat them up in August. You were 2-10 last year. You didn't need to say that to them. But you've got to get better. You have to improve. And there's something, any guy that's ever played high school, college ball, it doesn't matter. If you played in eighth grade, there's that struggle, I'll call it that, a conflict between I know I'm good and I can play and I have some talent, and a coach telling you, you're not good enough. You need to be better than you've ever been before. And the stretch to make that happen in between your ears, mentally, that is not easy to accomplish. And you can lose a locker room if you're too tough on him. But it worked. And little things that they did. Man, I watched two of the scrimmages that they had. I'm thinking, these guys are gassed. But it was all to get them ready for things like that. Now, they got to play well against Furman. Don't get me wrong. Do you lose all that momentum if you lose your second game?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, you lose your second game to an FCS opponent.
After just beating an SEC opponent?
Yeah.
Come on.
This is going back to something you and I had talked about earlier, and I think we've talked about it before. You know, and you were talking about coaches who, starting on Monday, they kind of start, even coming after a win, you start to tear a team down. And then gradually, over the course of the week, you start to build them back up so that come Saturday, they feel like they're world beaters and All-Americans again. Vince Lombardi did that with his Packers. Those stories of him, even after a loss, or even after a win, on a Monday, he would still just be brutal on them while watching film, and then gradually over the course of the week, he would begin to build those guys up to be able to play Sunday. That's almost what Sean Elliott has got to do this week, because those guys are going to walk around campus now for the next, 5 days this week, getting slapped on the back and told how awesome they are.
Absolutely.
But you can't go into that Furman game thinking that, because look, Furman is a Southern Conference FCS opponent, but they're no slouch either. So how much in your mind does this win over Tennessee change now the expectations for Georgia State?
Before we went on the air, Dave asked me the question, Dave Cohen, our play-by-play, and he's been there for 100 years. And Dave says, what do they need to win? And I said, somebody in that locker room needs to be saying right now, everybody in this room, we may be the only ones in the country, we're 26-point underdogs. We're going to go out there and beat those guys. Somebody needs to speak it, to say it, to create the illusion so that everybody in their own mind can say, yes, I agree with you. I'm going out there with you, right? You don't need to yell. But if you don't believe it, there's a big difference, right? So that message had been set from weeks earlier. And all the work that you do during the offseason, everything that's a part of all of that. And then, let's be candid, Tennessee didn't play their best game. They fumbled on the third play. It was an interception, actually, but I think it went as a fumble. And we score off of that, and now they're going, whoa, wait a second. That wasn't supposed to happen. And they didn't play Rocky Top quite as much, and there wasn't a full crowd. You know, there were about 80,000 people there, and they can sit 103. This wasn't the game that they were people on their roster that said things earlier in the week about, yeah, we can't wait for BYU next week. We're going to show those guys what to do. Well, they forgot about Georgia State. That's their fault. I'm not going to worry about what Tennessee
right.
did. You know, every team has their own demons that you got to work and try to figure out how you're going to solve those types of problems.
For a guy that has such a reputation of being a fiery coach, as does Jeremy Pruitt, I didn't see any fire out of Tennessee at all. I mean, those guys looked like they were almost like they were going through the motions. There was no energy, no sense of urgency, none of that.
When the fourth quarter break, right at the end of the third quarter, and everybody holds up four fingers, you see it all the time. Tennessee wasn't really doing that, but one of their assistant coaches. Now, Coach Pruitt was amongst the defense. Georgia State had the ball. The quarter ends. They'll start with it in the first play of the fourth quarter. And there was one assistant coach who was pretty livid over there on the sideline. In that circle just amongst the defensive players. But coaches can't bring out that fire. And if you look at their coaching staff with T. Martin, who won the national championship there, Chris Wanky, Rocker, and some of the other guys that they've got, I think it was 16 national championship rings on fingers of coaches that are there. And their connectivity all around the country, it's pretty amazing. And they've got talent. And I think there's some coaches that go, hey, listen, I'm going to get you ready mentally, but you've got to get yourself ready emotionally. That's up to you. I don't know if I don't know. I wasn't in their locker room. I just don't know what it was like. But, you know, maybe a little guilty of overlooking us and not knowing what to expect. Defensively, you're right. With Pruitt and his pedigree and other coaches that are there and the talent level that they have, you know, it was kind of quiet there at the end, and there were some folks that are saying we've got some big problems here at the University of Tennessee right now with our football program.
Not the least of which is the fact that 85,000 showed up. 85,503, which to most people you probably go, oh, that's a pretty good number. Well, that's about 22,000 below capacity there for a place that typically in years past has packed it out. And at some point in time, given the struggles of the last decade, really decade plus now, I mean, we're coming up on like really 11 years of this kind of meandering about with that program. You got to kind of wonder at some point in time, when does apathy start to set in? And to me, that's the worst thing that can happen to a program is when a fan base gets apathetic.
I wasn't at the press conference after the game, but the folks that were kind of had that weird feeling that somebody was going to bring this up. Hey, Coach, are you buying green bananas? You know what I mean? Are you buying fresh fruit? Because that may not be a good decision. And the reason I bring that up is there are some folks that are going, that's it. This is over. We need another coach. And have they not been trying ever since Philip Fulmer was let go to replace? And it's almost like, I'm going to give you not going to give you any more. That's it. We're going to have a quick honeymoon, and then we're getting divorced if you don't produce. I need wins. I need championships here. There's a very low threshold of patience now, and it's hard when you lose all the rising seniors every year to the draft. I think it's very difficult. You're playing a lot of freshmen and sophomores at this level each and every year. But you mentioned the stands. When I was at Colorado State, my first road game ever was at Tennessee, and I think the capacity then, Chris, was about 90. 3,000.
Sounds right.
They had 91.5, right? So they had 1,500 no-shows, and they booed the no-shows. They loved the fact that they were filling that place, and with the exception of a couple of areas, now it's an oval, but in the corners, if you know what I'm saying, just way up in the upper sections, there were a few spaces that didn't have any seats, but man, 85 is still a great crowd, as you mentioned, but not for Tennessee. That's not a great crowd for them. And they haven't had many of them over the past couple of years. They've made mention of that in their notes.
Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle, glad to be hanging out with you in for Andy and Randy today on the Midday Show. We'll get to what's trending next. How about those Braves? They just keep right on winning. We'll talk a little Braves, a little Falcons, United, Georgia, Georgia State. Big Saturday of college football. We'll get into all that and more when we continue on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, time now for What's Trending.
A look at the top trending headlines of the day.
Oh my God.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
For me, it's just having a 5.5 game lead with 24 more games to go. That's all I care about, is winning this division and making it to the playoffs. So if I have to keep putting numbers up, I'll keep doing it. But I think we've got a pretty good team around me to be able to take some pressure off.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. That is Braves first baseman Freddie Freeman. Look, the MVP talk around Freddie Freeman starting to pick up a little bit. I think Brian Snitker mentioned it in an interview either Saturday or Sunday that I saw where some quotes from it had gotten tweeted out where he thought Freddie should be the MVP. He hit 2 home runs, had 5 RBIs yesterday. He has been on an unbelievable tear for the Braves.
Why is he not considered more of a MVP candidate? I'm kind of curious about that.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I think he is, he has been as good and as consistent as anybody in baseball over the course of this year. I think he's been fantastic.
So the Braves have to win the series in order for him to be recognized a little bit more?
Hey, you and I talked about this back in, March, April, about how he is the most underappreciated, under-the-radar superstar in baseball. For a guy that has been so consistent over the course of his career, he's never quite gotten that love that you expect or think that a guy like Freddie Freeman should get.
I know what he needs to do. He needs to have a drug problem or a weight issue, or he needs to get mad at a fan and a kid. He needs to do something a little more controversial. That's what he needs to do. Then he's going to get all the attention on the four-letter network that he needs to. What have the Braves got over here? And then he'll win it. That's what he needs to do.
Freddie just keeps hitting. Braves keep winning. They beat the White Sox yesterday 5-4. Braves have scored 35 runs, Harper, over the last 4 games. They get the Blue Jays today, 120 for the first pitch. Mike Soroka.
What if he dated one of the Kardashians?
Today.
Chris,
he's
would
married.
That get him?
He's married.
That I know, it doesn't matter. We want to get an MVP here. We want the attention. We want tweets. We need Twitter followers and Facebook hits or stuff like that. Right? Don't forget that. Yeah, go ahead and hit the ball, but date one of the Kardashians. That's a great idea. Jahi came up with that one. That's better than mine all put together. You know, I had a drug problem. Did you know that? I told the Falcons I did because everybody else on the team that had one, they all get paid $50,000 extra. I'll do whatever. Yes, help me find.
Yes,
I need assistance.
Right,
it didn't work.
No,
not you.
After winning the U.S. Open Cup, Atlanta United dropped a 3-1 decision to Philly on Saturday. United, they don't play again now until the 14th of September. That win by Philadelphia. Put them back in first, 1 point ahead of New York FC, just 3 points ahead of Atlanta United. So the race in the East in the MLS continues. It's coming down the stretch, 6 matches left, and they get New York City in New York on September 25th.
That's going to be huge.
That's going to be really big.
And prior to going to to Portland, we've really struggled on the road, right? Really good at home. But do you think there's a little bit of a CONCACAF and Campeones and MLS, the Open. They played a lot of games
that have
nothing to do with MLS games.
That doesn't affect the MLS race. That's right.
Right. So to get back into MLS and then go up in Philly and lose to a good team, right? It's not like this is, the Union is good. And we had the lead and we had another chance for a goal, but I'm not worried. I'm really not. I'm disappointed that we're not in first, okay? But I'm not disappointed at the how the team has played in spite of all this other stuff. I think we should be just fine. I don't care about a game in August as much as I will when the playoffs come around, and that's when you need to be peaking, and I think they've been moving everything that they can do to get in that direction. So, tough loss. Sorry to see it, but I think we'll be okay.
This is a look at what's trending on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. Chris Goforth, Harper LaBelle filling in. As you may have heard by now, over the weekend, the Falcons agreed to terms with Matt Bryant, so the Falcons have a kicker again. Here's Thomas Dimitroff on the conversations he had with Dan Quinn about the signing.
So Dan Quinn and I had a lot of discussions about Matt Bryant over the whole offseason and into this season, and we knew that we were focused on trying to get some guys in here that were going to be here potentially for years to come. And as we started moving through the preseason, we realized more and more that we were going to bring him in. We were just trying to decide on when it was going to be, if it was going to be towards the end of preseason like it was, or whether it was going to be a little earlier. But we truly wanted to get the kickers that we had in place here an opportunity to kick for us.
He's back.
Dan and I had a lot of conversations. So evidently, Giorgio's kicking was a concern from the beginning.
Sounds that way, doesn't it?
Because you normally don't have a lot of conversations after you let a guy go and you sign someone else to take his place. So that's me reading between the lines. Other than that, okay, now how healthy is Matt going to be coming in? Have he not gone through camp? He could be fresh, and that could be great. He might have a little rust on him. Will that affect Minnesota?
Given his passion, all right, for what he does, even though the fact that he is 44 years old, and I know I've seen a couple of things on Twitter of him working out. So I would say Matt Bryant's going to show up ready to go. I don't think there's going to be too much to worry about there.
What worries me is the hamstring pull that he had 2 years ago and a possible injury taking place in a 44-year-old body that doesn't occur in a 34-year-old body.
Falcons have their 53-man roster set. I don't think there was a whole lot of surprises, if any, that the team made. A roster is always a little bit in flux, right, through the first couple of weeks of the season as things begin to take shape and maybe you get an injury or two here or there, work on getting your practice squad set. So there's probably a handful of additional moves coming for the Falcons over the next couple of weeks.
Well, unless you're the Miami Dolphins, you want to trade every one of your players and get rid of them. Yeah, I think they're pretty solid with who they got. And they've kind of, you know, how many guys did you think were going to make the roster after the draft from outside? You know, when we signed Carpenter and Brown, I'm thinking, oh, that's, wow, that's an interesting move. Both of them, are they both going to make it? And, you know, how is that going to work for the O-line and the depth you need there? And what does that mean for Schweitzer and some of the other guys that have been around forever? Not a whole lot of surprises, but I was thinking that there might be a defensive lineman out there that was on somebody else's roster that might be a cap casualty, or maybe a, you know, you bring in five guys, you're not going to keep five, you're going to keep three. Here's two guys that you may want on your roster. So you're right about the flexibility. Remember Frank Kush, the old coach for the Indianapolis Colts?
Right.
That dude would cut a guy every week, including the last week of the year. You go into week 17, so this is week 16 is just finished. He would cut a player just because he could and bring in a new guy just to take his spot. How would you like to play for that guy?
No thanks.
No thanks.
No thanks. Falcons, Vikings on your exclusive home for the Atlanta Falcons. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Pre-game show gets underway at 11 o'clock. Kickoff at 1 o'clock. That happens on Sunday. Don't forget, you can hear it right here. We talked about it just a few minutes ago. A big, big day Saturday in Knoxville for Georgia State. Of course, you were able to hear the game on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Here is the way it went down.
Here's the snap out of the gun to Dan Ellington. Going to hand it off to Barnett. Ellington on the keeper. Dan at the 20, at the 15, at the 10, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! That's a Georgia State touchdown! Dan Ellington, 22 yards, and they are shocking Tennessee here in Knoxville.
Here it is, and I want to thank, you know, Coach Curry and Coach Miles. You know, they laid the foundation for our football program today. So this win doesn't just represent us. It represents them and all their hard work and all their effort that they put into this great university and this football program. I'm so proud of everyone.
So who was more hoarse after that game, Dave Cohen or Sean Elliott?
Dave lost his voice about the middle of with about 10 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. We took a break. I go, you all right? We get him water. We got to get him a lozenge. What do we got to do? He goes, no, I'm okay. And then that one there. First, I had to turn my headphones down, right? Dave was – and the interception that we had, that was middle of the fourth quarter too. That was one where he lost it. There, you know, and I felt so good for him, for Sam. And they mentioned the other coaches. I'll be candid. That was Sean Elliott's win. Had nothing to do with Bill Curry or Trent Miles. Had right. nothing to do with them. He's the one who pushed those guys to the next level. And the way he's been doing that over the past, literally, you know, since the end of the Georgia Southern game last year. Gentlemen, this isn't going to work. Not like that. We're going to go to a different level. We need to. And he pushes these kids. He really pushes them hard. If you're loved, there's a difference. If you know that the coach loves and appreciates and cares for you, you'll go through a wall for him because you know that. There's some coaches that don't care. And I'm not picking on anyone specifically. I'm really not. I'm just saying you if you're a coach and you don't show your kids how much you care about them, they sense it and they'll rebel against it. But if you take care of your boys, right, your guys, no matter what sport you're in, and he's done that. He has not been easy on them at all. There's nothing easy about what they went through.
Georgia beat Vanderbilt, wrapping up our college football conversation here on What's Trending. Georgia beat Vandy 30-6 on Saturday. We were out at Stats, had a great time Saturday on college football game time from noon until 3 Saturday at Stats, and I asked John and Randy, over under Georgia 300 yards rushing. They both said it would go under. Georgia finished with 324 yards.
What'd you think?
Rushing. I thought there was a very good chance that Georgia would go over that.
But you
mark.
Went under, though, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a tough number to hit in week one.
That is a tough number to hit in week one against a conference foe. But 324 yards rushing. DeAndre Swift had a big night. Jake Fromm was, I'll call it, efficient. Demetrius Robertson, Matt Landers, Lawrence Cager all had solid days for those receivers. We didn't see Dom Blaylock. We didn't see George Pickens like I thought we might. But at the end of the day, Georgia's 1-0 and 1-0 in the SEC, and that's pretty much what matters.
Was that a ho-hum victory for you? Did you expect more out of Vanderbilt as the season started?
It was about the way I thought. Okay. I thought, actually, I would have thought that game might be something more along the lines of like maybe 17-6 at the half, and then Georgia pull away and win it like, you know, 37-13 or something like that. So it being 30-6 is... It's within the ballpark of about where I thought it would be.
In the 7 years that I've been here, Georgia has had some issues with Clemson early in the year or South Carolina early in the year, obviously with Florida.
Well, they've had some issues before, especially going to Nashville and facing Vanderbilt.
They lost
up there.
To them just the last time they were up there, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. So maybe not the last time, but it's been within the recent past. They had a stow tub in Nashville, but... You know, came out Saturday, took care of business. College football coming up tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Notre Dame and Louisville, you can hear it here. Pregame at 7:30. They'll kick it off at 8 o'clock. That's happening tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll talk a little Braves baseball. Rosters have expanded. It is the 1st of September, and the Braves have a 5.5-game lead over the Nationals. We'll get into all of that when we return. Chris and Harper in for Andy and Randy on the Midday Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
High fly ball to deep center. Engel going back to the wall. He reeled him in with a long homer.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. That was Chip Carey on the call from Fox Sports South. Freddie Freeman with a two-run homer, number 38 on the year. Big day yesterday for Freddie. Two homers, five RBIs. Braves are on a bit of a roll, 12-2 since August the 16th. They beat the White Sox yesterday 5-4. As we mentioned during the Watch Trending segment just a few minutes ago, Braves have scored 35 runs in their last four games. Julio Teheran yesterday, 6 innings, 2 runs, 3 hits. Mark Melanson got the save. Overall, Braves looked good. They have continued to look good. Washington Nationals, though, have been very hot. Braves are 19-9 in the month of August and lost a game in the standings. The Nationals, by the way, their last 65 games, Harper, 45-20 in their last 65.
Very impressive. And
they've been better than the Dodgers during that stretch.
Yeah, Dodgers are slumping too right now. They're slumping. You know, nice to have a 20-game lead in your division, right? And then start your slump. But teams do that from time to time. Now, I'm just wondering whether or not my overall impression with the race being this tight and with a few of the injuries and stuff like that, that's really put a lot of pressure, in my opinion, on some of the other day-to-day guys, and they haven't really had any time to get any rest. And
you look at what the Braves did in the month of August, 19-9 in the month of August. It's a good month, right?
Great month.
Look at what they did it with. Look at all the – when you start to factor in all the injuries that the Braves had, that they had to deal with in late July through the month of August, I think that's pretty remarkable what they were able to do.
Yeah, and credit to the AAA and some of the other moves that they made.
Speaking
right?
of AAA.
What do you got?
How about those Gwinnett Stripers? They made the playoffs. Only team in the Braves organization to make the playoffs.
So Tony Schiavone, we get to hear the sweet golden tones of Tony Schiavone a little bit more.
Postseason baseball for Tony.
Hey, have you heard anything about the bullpen and Luke Jackson and all the problems? I mean, it's not perfect, but isn't it interesting how that's kind of quieted down a
little bit? We don't look at it, or at least I don't. Don't look at it with fear anymore. You know, used to, there was that time when it got late in the game and you had the lead, and it was just dread and fear and nail-biting and cursing and throwing things at the television. I don't know that you do that as much. And Swarzak was that one bright spot there for a while. Now it seems like he's kind of slumped a little bit. But the other guys have been able to pick up the slack.
Yeah. I think the depth has been a real blessing in disguise.
They've thrown a lot. I don't know what the number is. I haven't gone and looked and counted. How many pitchers have the Braves used this year? Because it feels like they've used a lot.
Yeah.
To get to where they are. But look, there's no complaining. 5.5-game lead, plus 90 in the run differential. The Nationals, by the way, plus 123 in run differential.
They're doing something pretty amazing there. When you stop to think about how early, they're the team you're not going to have to worry about. You know, maybe the Mets, we don't
they
know.
Were terrible
Definitely
early.
Definitely not the Marlins. But, you know, the Phillies were going to win the World Series.
The Nationals were terrible early in the season. They've been great of late. As a matter of fact, we talked about 45-20 in their last 65. That's a better record than what the Dodgers have. But I think what the Nationals have done is they have really pounded bad teams. They're still below 500 against teams with winning records. But they have been able to pound those the Miami Marlins, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Colorado Rockies, those type teams. They've been able to pound them and put up a lot of runs, and they've won a lot of those games. They haven't done well necessarily against teams that are
division leaders, yeah.
Or teams over 500. Braves, by the way, 30 games over 500, first time since 2013. That's a good feeling if you're a Braves fan. But Harper, 2 weeks with 5.5-game lead, the next 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, really, but starting Thursday, and for the next 2 weeks, the Braves will figure out the National League East. Because you've got Washington coming to town. Braves play Toronto today and tomorrow. They're off Wednesday.
Watch out for this Bichette kid. Yes,
yeah.
That name
yeah.
rings a bell, right? Dante Bichette's son, who I think got to play in the Little League World Series a couple years ago, right, when he was just a little 12-year-old. And now he was hitting 368 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, he was a guy coming up through the minors that him, along with Vlad Guerrero's kid, were the two of the guys, at least, that, and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with their, you know, having dad's name, but two guys that got a lot of attention among those that follow minor league baseball as those guys made their trek through the minors to the big leagues. He's got a heck of a future. Heck of a future. But that's what the Braves have, is two with Toronto, off day Wednesday. Washington then, The Nationals will be in town for four starting Thursday. Then you go to Philly for four games, and the Phillies are 12.5 games back, five games over 500, but 12.5 games back. You can't tell me that Philly would not love or would love nothing more than to spoil the Braves by being able to. You heard Chip Carey in Tanitra Sports Flash say that, you know, you got to win the series now. Just keep winning the series and you'll be fine. You can't tell me that Philly won't be ramped up and amped up to welcome the Braves in for four games first part of next week. Then the Braves go to Washington for three more. So you've got seven games against Washington basically in the next 2 weeks.
Phillies have according to the ESPN chart that I'm looking at, you know, if you go to their standings over on the right-hand side, it'll say playoff percentage. I mean, what the odds makers right now are giving, Philly has a 4.6 chance of making the playoffs. However, Washington, who's, as you mentioned, 5.5 out, they're 98.9 of being one of those wild card teams. The other one will probably be Chicago. It looks like if St. Louis does end up winning the division, someone's going to have to say, all right, we'll take it. Because we haven't wanted it, but you don't want it either, so we're going to have to win that division.
Central's been the most interesting race in the East with St. Louis and Chicago kind of going back and forth all year. Here's what I like about that. You're going to have that other wild card team will be one of those teams out of the Central going against the Phillies, and then the winner of that will get the Dodgers. So as a Braves fan, I like the fact that the other two teams that I consider to be a threat in the postseason will have to face each other.
Okay. I'm with
eliminate one of them.
Yeah.
You know, probably going to be the Nationals, but eliminate one of them.
Brewers are six out. I just haven't seen the consistency in Milwaukee. And they've played a lot of games with Chicago and with St. Louis recently.
You know, they were the hot team there for a little bit, weren't they?
They're six out right now of St. Louis's lead in the division. The Cubs are three back. And the Cubs, right, when you think about it, they should be six ahead of everybody when you look at their lineup and everything. But something, I don't know, from very early on in the year, you know, they started a little slowly. So did Houston. So did the Yankees. But the other clubs seem to catch up and figure it out a little bit better, a little bit quicker than what Chicago has.
This homestand, huge for the Braves. Toronto today and tomorrow, off day Wednesday, and then four at home against the Nationals. Crisco, Forth, Harper, LaBelle, we are in for Andy and Randy here on the Midday Show on this Labor Day. Glad to be hanging out with you, keeping you company. We'll go around the NFL. Little NFL, no huddle. That's next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.